Welcome, everybody. We are here this morning for the budget work session for the confirmation board for FY17. Welcome. Mike's got some members of the confirmation board here. So we'll go ahead and get started with the revenue. Mike, anything you want to start with?
I guess first off, do any of you care if we do conservation or IRVM first?
Doesn't make any difference.
However you want to do it.
However you want to do it.
Then let's do IRVM first.
Okay. Yeah, some guys need to go to work.
Just back to the field. Thank you.
Especially after that presentation Monday night.
Need to work, need to work on my hands.
Still haven't got that.
And
I thought it was an okay presentation.
And I don't want to assume that everyone knows each other. You may well, but pleased to have three of our conservation board members here. So I think you know on the ends Nancy Franz. She is vice chair this year. Craig Myers, he is the chair this year. And then Ted, of course, you know.
Yeah. Nobody knows Ted.
No. Everybody knows Ted.
And I probably, Mr. Chair, I probably shouldn't say this, but I want to say it anyway.
Hold on. Would you have a breakfast?
It's very important for the other board members to actually be here that's never been here through the board session. I know Ted in the past and been here before and so forth. I've had the pleasure of sitting through board meetings and going through the budget with this group. And I can tell you beyond about the level of scrutiny and the discussion that goes around looking at the needs and the projections has really been outstanding. However, when we come here, this is their opportunity again for you to kind of talk about their vision and the impact and how they see things going. Mike is well aware, Jolene is well aware, that while we look at different figures and so forth, we're still looking to try to get as close to actual as we possibly can. We see some potentially there could be a few areas where a few adjustments will be looked at or probably be talked about. But this is, again, your opportunity to have these two recognize some of the things that we've done. And Mike, you've done, again, an excellent job, just as well as staff and the input that you've brought to us each and every year. And because we've got some big ticket items and some big things here, trying to factor in how this budget may be anticipating some of those things, I think is also important as we go through the discussion.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
Hi.
Good morning, Joe.
Why don't you guys, well, obviously you start with revenue typically, and if there's any questions, we're going to talk about, what I can bring in.
I think we're getting now to the point in this program where we've got a good idea. You feel good about the 27 that you think that, so that's been a moving target. Every year I've pushed you on that. I've tried to get you to be able to bill a little more. It looks to me like 27 might be a little bit of a reach, but it's at least in the ballpark.
It's in the ballpark. We've had some setbacks with equipment, 6-inch rain in the peak of moving things. Tyler is from Marshall County. He's great, but he learned how to swim in a horse tank. And so when I put him out in the drainage ditch over his head, we're a little sketchy on that.
Especially if you need him to get like that, rubber duck.
He has waders, but running the chainsaw floating is a new thing. They don't teach on OSHA. But I'm working on that video.
You must not watch that swamp logger, whatever it is, the crazy guy that stands in water over his head.
They're watching that now. They're reviewing that at the job. So 27 is a little reach. Right now we're at about 10. I do have a seasonal person with hours we waited for good weather. It's hard to keep that person on because they want to, the deal is they want to kind of work, pay the bills.
Yep.
You tell them to go home after a 6-inch rain for 2 weeks. It's tough for them to kind of come back to find that employee that's willing to do that. That's one of the main struggles, beyond the budget part, is finding that employee out there that can help us work through that you know, part-time scenario. So we're gonna still shoot for that.
Okay.
As far as equipment, you know, I called the NRCS up, which has the main lead on how many acres may be going into CRP in Story County. That doesn't always correlate to if they're going to rent equipment from us, but typically they do over the last 25 years. So, and they're at about, you know, signed or unsigned, unofficially over 1,000 acres going in, which is really neat for county as far as loss of soil and getting things stabilized. So at $12 an acre renting out the drill, we're at, you know, $1,200 for 20, you know, yeah, 1,500, 22, right? 12 times 100, yeah, about $1,500 for equipment rental. With that, you add on when we spray weeds and contract that out for those that can't spray the weeds themselves. We do that pretty much at cost to help producers and landowners in Story County without causing a fuss. And that brings us up to that estimated amount.
Yeah, well, I mean, and so it looks to me like we're going to do better, I mean, almost double what we budgeted this year in that line item.
Yeah.
But then I appreciate, you know, then we look at the history, I appreciate you bringing that back down to what I think is fairly a reasonable estimate for next year.
So.
That's all I have on revenue.
All right, we'll move to expenses. Mr. Release,
the salary line items in your proposed budget are going to look odd for a couple reasons. One of your positions will be a bargaining unit and one will not. So that affects it. In the year we're in now, the current year, we are at 94% of budgeted salaries. So we'll make that whole as the year runs on. But the comparison from into the 17 budget is wacky because of A, it's 100% budget, and B, it's 27 pay periods. So it looks real odd. In this budget is a 2.5% plus a quarter an hour at this point in time. So that is what we're putting forward as far as budgeting right now, and then find a decision on that. And the board is expecting to only, again, budget 94% of the salaries going into next year. So this number and all the related salary items are going to look different.
Still, our commitment is just to make it whole. We're gonna have at whatever the actuals are. We're gonna handle that on the board.
Okay.
And Joe, as serious as it is in expenses, and we can talk about any of them you want, I only have one question, and that's contract labor. Clearly, we've been all over the place on that. We really going to be able to do 2.5 townships? I mean, that's what the $25,000 is, right?
Oh, I'm going to try to get someone hired to do that. I think we, you know, we had it. The history is back in the 2007. We started at about 35, maybe 40. We got, there were about half a dozen contractors that would spray brush or soil sterilant for the utility people, roadsides, drainage ditches. We're down to two that I'm aware of at this point in the state to do that. And so they're pretty booked up. And so they, you know, they're going to grab the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to do the Neil Smith area for 80. 200, you know, so
sure.
25, I'm hoping we can get someone to bite.
What have we done in the last couple of years?
Nothing. Okay. We tried 10. 10 didn't work. I think we went 20 the year before that, maybe 2014, and we did get someone to come in. So 10 didn't work, so we're going to go back to 25 and see if we can't get them to come in. Story County, believe it or not, compared to a lot of other counties, doesn't have a huge brush problem. So they can cruise these roads and do and cover a lot of ground without using a lot of labor and material. So I'm hoping we can get a couple townships done for that $2,500 and get someone to do it, obviously.
At what point is it more cost-effective for us to get our own equipment and handle it in-house?
we'd have to have more staff and more equipment. I think it's more cost effective to have these guys do it. Last time I ran the numbers, it's been a couple years, it was about $100 per centerline mile for a contractor. We were at about $10 less than that. But that's without all the trouble of hiring the staff, keeping the equipment up, maintaining the equipment, insurance liabilities if we were to spray off site and hit someone's garden, or, you know, do
something. Yeah, but so what I'm looking at is I'm trying to, you just told us that you got a problem keeping staff on because you get to a 6-inch rain or whatever and you can't send them out. And I'm just wondering if there is any possible synergy there to grow, have it more in-house, and still save dollars offsetting none.
Let's pick that up after I go out and look for these contractors. I haven't quite had them come around and look.
That,
that's a possibility that I, you know, I try to keep it simple, Ford, you know, and not grow so much.
Yeah, and I'm not a huge fan of growing for the sake of growing.
Right.
But if we can provide a better service, we can get some synergies where we're not just handling the brush issue with 25,000, we're also strengthening some of our drainage issues and things like that. Then all of a sudden it starts to make a lot of sense to me. And I just want to make sure, I'm not saying it's the right way to go, I just want to make sure we're exploring it.
Okay.
But what would we need for equipment that we don't have? We were going to start doing it ourselves.
We would need another UTV. I'd write a grant for that. You know, they're about $15,000. You get $8,000 through a grant if the Living Roadway Trust Fund would do that. So, you know, we'd have $10,000 wrapped up in equipment. You need to put a sprayer in the back of that thing and either get a seasonal on where we get enough hours through the spring and the fall to keep that going. That's another $10,000 probably.
Yeah, so it just makes sense to me that as far as the help, if you locate one person and their job happens to be the brush control and the drainage districts, and then maintaining the equipment and doing the ancillary things that we've got to do, it almost feels to me like we could do something like that and solve two problems at once.
I like that idea.
So, but we need to put the numbers to it. You need to see what's available out there.
Okay.
I would much rather spend $25,000 to strengthen multiple areas in Story County than $25,000 to a out-of-county contractor who comes in, sprays 2.5 counties, and goes home.
Well, that was the whole plan through the roadside program in the late 80s was to get the, you know, they didn't have a lot of sensitivity. Spring.
I'd rather it be us than somebody else.
Okay.
It just needs to make sense bottom line to us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did this also address the question that came up in there in this work session as far as the ditch cleaning and clearing question?
Well, there was a question about, because I've had a couple of guys from Slater area come in and talk to me about.
Oh, I think I know who they are.
And then, you know, his question is, you know, why do we wait until, you know, the entire ditch, length of the ditch needs cleaned out? Now you're at a $700,000 project. But then the conversation we've had since then is, you know, we have to be careful what we do in those ditches so we don't look like we're trying to skirt the limit so we're not getting an engineer's support.
Well, you know, obviously they've upped the limit on what we can do without having to go through all the, you know, hoops, I guess. I talked to Darren about this the other day, and quite honestly, we didn't really come up with a perfect.
Conversations with my brother about it also, and I know that there was a gentleman from he's in Hamilton County, but it's his last name, did some work for Boone County in one of theirs, and I think they paid him by the hour.
Well, there are landowners and producers and operators are all the same that do have the equipment now in Story County that can do this work, and I think that those are the folks that are talking to you.
Yeah, I mean, that's why he was here. I mean, he's got the equipment. He doesn't like to see it sitting in the shed.
Yeah.
when he could be out running it. But
well, I propose that you know, without breaking any open meeting laws, that we get together and talk about open ditch maintenance in that respect, on what we can do before we wait for a whole 4 mile section of an open ditch to have to get bid out by an engineer.
That was the goal. I mean, we didn't talk about it in terms of clean out. We talked about it in terms of vegetation control. But the goal is that we not put future drainage district trustees in the position of having to go through the process of the $750,000 project,
right,
when we can take care of it $20,000 at a time.
Right.
The one thing that we've noticed when we're out working in these open ditches that have been, I don't know if it was hourly rate or whatever happened, and I guess I'll reference the one down north of Slater. We would have to come up with some criteria that they follow,
yeah,
obviously, because it's really hard for us to go in when it's not done right to right. even get close to those things because, for instance, maybe the spoil wasn't spread out correctly.
Oh, yeah. My fear there is it can turn into such a quagmire that it ends up costing us astronomically more than it would cost us. Again, I go back to the same philosophy that I have in terms of brush spraying. I would much rather do it in-house. If it's affordable, I'd much rather do it in-house than ship it out somewhere.
I think we probably got at least one or two meetings as trustees coming up in the near future. We can add a discussion.
Hey, just stick your head in the Scott ball and say, hey, next time they're getting together as trustees, we'll start pulling you in.
Yeah.
We can do it all then.
And, you know, we ran numbers when this program started hard. You know, we spent a lot of time figuring out the point of, you know, return where we can log out in-house, and it is more efficient to hire, I'll just throw construct out there, that have a little more equipment, bigger equipment to do it. And so that's the chunk that we bid off, but we can do it efficiently.
Right.
And over that, we contract out. So we do have those numbers.
Yeah. And now just the conversation, twofold that I see the conversation we need to have. One, in relation to this, we need to look at expanding beyond just vegetation and talking about some actual dirt moving, reshaping of some of these ditches.
Yeah.
And do we want to do any of that in-house? Because we don't right now. The second one is, what are the possible synergies of having that program but having overlap with our brush control program along the roadways? And is it reasonable to grow both in-house and do it at a level that does not put an exorbitant amount of cost on storing him? And I feel like I'm shirking my responsibility, since that's the only... Normally, I have more questions than that on the dang expense side. I'll make up for it with Mike here.
One thing I'd like to point out, this is not in what they have, right?
Sure.
On... Let's see, education and training.
It's 422.
Oh, let's see. Just a minor change here. When we were putting this together, we failed to catch this. On the conservation budget,
right,
we have proposed to increase our...
25 apiece.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And so we didn't show that on the IRVM budget. Now we're going back and requesting that. So it's in addition to what you have. So it would be an additional $250 on page 82.
And so we can have the conservation question now, especially as it relates to Joe and Tyler, and that is, I was hoping we could go less than 125 apiece. And plug in a number more like an increase the education training, but not at that level. And so the number I first plugged in was, can we increase 50 this year and then come back and do the same thing next year and ultimately get there, but not get there in 1 year? And so
what do you see as involved with the education and training? What is, I mean, other than the fact that you've got another person that's going through
I'll let any of the board members here that want to chime in. This was an item that came up at our board work session in November when we were discussing just department-wide continuing education, and that the amount that is in there hasn't been enough to get people to the trainings that we want to get them to and that we feel that we need to get them to in order to keep their skills up and meet our program. So I think that we just had the discussion of we should really up that to from the 375 to the 500,
right.
to represent that.
Yeah, I remember that conversation now.
Well, and we were comparing it to similar organizations and what their costs are, as well as the cost of professional development is just skyrocketing.
Yep.
And yep. A lot of the work that our folks do, you can't do through a webinar. You have to have hands-on training.
As we become more sophisticated in our operations of conservation and requirements, it takes a lot to keep our people up to speed to what's happening out there, too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. But for me, when we spread it out for every staff member, it feels like there's a little wiggle room there. And so what I'm suggesting on the conservation side, and we can go back and do the math on the IRVM side, but you guys plugged in there a request of $20,630. Now, $10,000 of that is Law Enforcement Academy, which I assume we're going to talk about the new position when we get to you, and that's where I felt like that was. And that's up from 8,900 this year that we had in, going up over 20. And what I'm suggesting is, can we roll that back to more like 19,000 instead of the 20,630? I'm not asking us to go all the way back. I was just looking at, can we, knowing that it's an average kind of thing, can we figure out how to make that average work? And what it would mean to me, Mike, is that you as director would then identify, these are the trainings that are really, really important. These are the ones we can hold off on, and we can get the people necessary to these. Since we weren't talking about actually spending that $500 per employee, we're talking about having those funds available and then pick and choose who's getting what training based on what we need, right?
That's not my understanding.
No,
not,
you're wanting to spend exactly $500 per
employee. My understanding is each person has an amount,
right.
And the supervisor works with them to select. We're investing in each person.
Right.
Yeah. And their professional development. That was the model we were using in the conversation.
But is everyone even going to use that $500? No. In reality, right now, we have people using $500 and people using $200.
Right.
In reality, right now.
Right.
So
also the certain type of training that there will be.
Right, and so no, we don't hold everyone to here's your $500. But I think just as a whole, we're finding that I guess average isn't high enough. So that bears the request, or bears the request of the $500. So
on a wheels meet the pavement kind of deal. For instance, a lot of folks are coming in with not a lot of CDL experience. Like back in the day, you might have drove the grain truck on the farm. And to send them to a class just to get them up to a level to start the test, I think $200 to $300 just to start the training on a CDL that maybe back in the day most folks already had. And so then if you're going to certify for all the different herbicides out there, maybe a chainsaw safety class and things, it does get up there. And sometimes, Mike, when you only see $200 spent, and Jolene, that's because a lot, you see all these emails about all the different experiences that you can go to and look and see and learn. You really just hit delete because, we can't afford it. And it's kind of a shame because there's some neat opportunities out there where folks can learn and keep their saw sharp, in essence. We just don't really consider that. It would be nice to consider that in the future.
Sure, but for me, Joe, there's kind of two separate parallel tracks, right? There's the trainings that are absolutely necessary to be able to do the job that we're asking you to do. That's the CDL, right? We need you, man, we find a way to get that done. We buy the bullet. And then there's the second one that is the professional development component that I see real value in. I just am ever conscientious. And frankly, it relates maybe more to some other areas in county government where we're seeing education and training costs skyrocket. So I can easily be dissuaded. You know, again, we're talking about $1,000, $1,500 here. I can easily be dissuaded. But it's the principle, to me, of the thing that we find a way to get where we're going, but we find a way to do it a chunk at a time rather than one fell swoop. But for me, Joe, it's two different.
I get it.
That's two different things. So we want to add $250 here on education and training in the in IRVM, so that would take that to
$1,200.
Enjoy the rest of the week.
Joe, you'll check with Scott. Make sure that he's aware of who you want to visit with you next time we're here, or next time we can. Is great.
I'll stop over and chat with him right now.
Thank you.
Well, let's see. I guess first off, the conservation budget as a whole. There's a few, as you're well aware, there are a few large items in here that are driving the big changes. First off is the ISU Research Park, the potential program there. So you're going to see that represented on the expense side, not on the revenue side. Capital improvements, you're going to see represented on both sides, expense and revenue. And that those are significant projects. And then, of course, the unknown right now on the expense side is the collective bargaining units, so per unit. Those are the big drivers in the change in this budget from the last year. On the revenue side, let's see. We are showing, skip down to other state grants. We're showing 100,000 there from, what page is that on?
That's on page 65.
Page 65.
The narrative is on page 7.
Oh, okay.
100,000 there for a proper, for a partial payment on a property transfer. That'd be money in, money out. We are showing above that on local government projects, 450,000 for the Hickory Grove Shoreline project. Again, that's coming from DNR again. That's money in, money out. And those were the only big changes on the revenue side. Camping revenues, pretty static. We did drop the revenue a little bit projected at Dakin's this year. In FY16, we projected it at 53. Most likely, we're going to end up at 34, 35. And so we're dropping that a little bit for FY17 down to 40.
How was our usage on the days that we were open?
Oh, good. It's a matter of, you know, we were kind of looking in the crystal ball to see what the usage would be up there. We were on the high side. The fact of the matter is it's a new site.
Right.
There's no shade for camping to speak of. And that's going to take some time to develop. I mean, we were very ambitious, aggressive in our tree planting. And we have a lot more to plant this year. But we all know that's going to take a little time to make it feel like a campground rather than you're in the middle of
I would expect it to grow as we get through the years. I'm going to be very interested to see anecdotally what kind of repeat traffic we have up there. And we're going to learn a lot this year.
From a marketing standpoint, when I went to a couple ISU football tailgating and a lot of people with the RVs that like to camp, I mentioned what we have done to Davis Lake, and I was amazed that a lot of them just hadn't heard about it yet. And I was trying to encourage them to try to go. So what I'm wondering is you know, like that little flyer card you had at Board Meeting the other night, if we had something that maybe during a football game or preview, a little like to slow down and have somebody pass out. And a lot of it is just people just, oh, hey, I'd probably like to take advantage of that. And once the word of mouth gets out there, you know, more and more might do it. So I'm just trying to figure out, are there other ways that we can help market that this site is available now and hopefully we'll pick up some additional traffic.
Something to put on the windshields.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, you won't have anything to do here.
But no, I mean, again, they were amazing. And then a couple of them went down to the Altoona, and they said they go to different places all the time. And this one guy said, yeah, he said he was definitely going to do that next year. So happened to be, and I introduced Carol Williams to him. And they were right across from each other. And so this was another opportunity. And found out that his son works for Polk County Conservation. And so when you start that word of mouth type thing, you know, that's how we can get more and more people involved.
Yeah, I had a couple of small questions on revenues, Mike. Interest on investments. I know it's next to nothing, but we've already brought in $24 this year, and you've re-estimated to 25. It feels like if we brought in 24 for the first 6 months, we should do better than $1 in the next 6 months. And then we just carried it across for next year. I mean, it looks to me like it's more like a $50 bill. And,
okay.
And
in REIT?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, yeah, okay.
I mean, it's not, like I say, I just like things.
Yeah,
that's why it's done. Yeah. The reason we did that is we spent it down.
There was nothing left in that account.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so if there's nothing left, there's nothing left.
Well, but it gets money every year.
Yeah.
So
it'll be,
yeah. Yeah, we can do 50 with that.
That's what
we
want to go 50 on that.
And then talk me through why we're going to independent contractor on firewood.
You know, frankly, it takes so much staff time to do it. I think we're money ahead. We're losing a little bit on the revenue side, but we're gaining a little bit on the labor side, if you will.
Well, it's
opportunities.
Time that we'll be able to invest somewhere else, right?
Right.
It's not that we're
exactly
gaining any dollars on the other side.
No, correct. We're not gaining any dollars. But the amount of time that staff puts into, you know, cutting wood, splitting wood, bundling wood, getting it delivered to the host who then sells it, I think we're just further ahead if we contract that out and ask for a small percentage on their sales.
Yeah. It just struck me.
Yep. I'd love to be able to do that with boat rentals too, but we haven't figured a way out to do that. Any other revenue questions?
Diarrhea of the mouth, if I talk to you.
Mike Gundy, and as you go down the floor from the bottom, you stop by shop supplies. That's the one I had a question prior to that. Is this the process now with David Lake and then potential with the research park? We're looking at things that increase the need there, or just replacing the old equipment. This would be which? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, fifth one up on page 69. It's on, you're at 34.79, 47% right now, and we estimate the fifth, and you're 89 on 9.
Okay. Let's see, we have an amended for FY16 of 7390 on the line.
Yeah, the re-estimated in FY16 should be
8090. Okay. Oh.
I failed to include everything in that column. So it will be pretty much similar to this.
Okay. I mean, it looks to me like we're trying to save some money there, and what we realize it is that we need those shop supplies every year.
I guess the biggest single item on there, and some of this we can, well, let me stick with the biggest single item on there is $1,300 for replacement of a flammable material storage cabinet.
But just when you gave me the other total that we estimated, that made it a little clearer. But I was trying to go back and look at history and that, and then just trying to see what the additional responsibilities and things. And then we also have to kind of recognize that we really will only have a half a year of David Lake being open and so forth, and thinking that there were going to be some additional expenditures that we're factoring in and explaining some increase to.
The one thing, and I guess I'll just lead off with this, the one thing that that you'll see represented throughout is the contemplation of a full year of operations at the research park.
Right.
And that comes to play with shop supplies. To a small amount, we've got $500 in there for shop supplies there. You know, that's not going to play out that way. We're not going to have a full year's operation. So there is some room for reduction in that 500, as there are. We can chat about with some other lines as we move forward.
Yeah, and I'd like to. And let you know why you bring that up. Let's go ahead and have the conversation about the new position you request, because then that will feed in to every other one of these lines.
Okay. So I think, you know, early on when we started discussing the research park. And that new project, we had been contemplating and always foreseeing that with that added project, we're going to have an added need for staff, both on a seasonal level and on a permanent level with undertaking a project like that. So you know, we've spent some time looking at different scenarios and what the, you know, doing analysis what the real labor need is there. And that real labor need is going to equate to, on the permanent side, one FTE. All said and done, it comes up to about, our estimate comes up to about 37 hours a week. And so we reviewed all of the work that's going to be required at that, and what positions, what current positions we have that that work is going to come from at the new park. And so far and above what came out to be the highest amount of hours per existing position is the park ranger position at the new research park. So therefore we start looking at, okay, when we're needing more time there for our rangers, how do we best, in looking at how we then fill that need, what's the best way to do it? We looked at all kinds of options, from say a technician level option up, and with the underlying premise that most of the time there is needed on it, the level of a ranger. So then we looked at within the ranger options, what are our possibilities there. So if we fill a position with another park ranger, we've got two park ranger proper. We've got one special projects ranger. So we got three law enforcement certified folks. We've got three folks right now in that supervise on a peer level, that supervise all of our daily operations on the grounds side. So operations of Dakin's, operations of Hickory, McFarland, Peterson, you name it, all of our facilities. We've got three peers. So two of those are rangers and then one natural resource specialist. So anyway, back to the research park. Our options were to, again, with the understanding that we need to fill a ranger position, our options were, well, we can put a assistant ranger in under an existing ranger. We can put a peer ranger in, or we could put a supervisory ranger in. So those are really the three options that we kind of drilled in on. Options number one and three essentially are the same thing because you're creating that hierarchy within the rangers. Does that make sense? So option number two, which was a peer ranger, is problematic because we already have, right now, we have one person supervising those three peers in our field operations. And those three peers, sometimes with just the nature of no reflection of the personalities, but the nature of that kind of system, when those three people are trying to operate their own individual piece of the pie, there gets to be struggles at this level. And so adding a fourth to this same peer level or supervisory level gets a bit problematic. It's already problematic with three. And so, in short, that and looking at some of our current needs are as far as staffing or our operations side. You know, right now, we have a lot of projects on the plate, a lot of work to be done, and right now we are lacking in project management. And so we've got more needs that we have that are coming up to the surface than we have the ability to manage those needs and get funds and get tasking done and get permitting done and those kinds of things. So, and a lot of that falls on me right now, which it should. But so that process is slowing things down for those three getting work done. And so when I looked at all of that, well, if we put this new position in as a supervisory ranger position, and I called it an operations supervisor here, then we're meeting that, we're helping to fill that need, as well as we're filtering that labor down, if you will, into meeting the need on the ground. Does that make sense? So if we fill in at a lower level, we don't have as many options department-wide in how we assign tasking and what kind of needs we meet, because there's only so many capabilities that could be met by that position. If we fill it at a higher level, then we've got that whole depth to be able to reassign staff, reassign resources to meet different needs. So
the two ranger positions and the third one, they all three report directly to you right now?
Correct.
How many direct reports do you have right now?
Seven.
So since I've got the history of this conversation, obviously I'll go through where my thought process was and now is.
First of all, to Mike's complete credit, the first time that we talked about the research park, which has been 2.5 years ago, the very first time we talked about it, Mike was quick to say, now, you understand that if we take off something like this, it's going to mean an increase in staffing. It's going to mean an increase in costs, right, operational costs. And I assured him at that point that I completely recognized that it was not reasonable to ask for a project of this magnitude and without the realization that it was going to be an increase. At that time, in my mind, it was a ranger position. It just made sense to me. You do a new park, we're going to have increased ranger costs. And so I've gone through that 2.5 years thinking of that as a ranger position. In fact, when this budget came forward, I called Mike and I said, okay, well, you and I got to have a conversation because this is different than what I had pictured. And we sat down, actually Deb and Alyssa and Mike and I all sat down and we went through it. Alyssa has spent, I think, a lot of time really analyzing where we are. And the reality is 37 hours a week, I think you mentioned, is what you estimate. But it's not 37 hours of ranger time. Or 37. I mean, it's a lot of ranger time. And then the second thing that Mike said to me that really resonated was the whole, you got 7 direct reports right now, which is too many. And what we're finding is we've got this unbelievably qualified, phenomenal conservation director, and we need to be utilizing him at the high end of issues as much as we can. And the structure we have right now is pulling him down to where he's having to deal with things that frankly aren't efficient for us. And so I've come full circle on it, and I believe that what conservation is proposing with this ranger supervisor, is that right? With this ranger supervisor, new structure as it relates to the rangers, and the way that allows us to fill those 37 hours a week of research part-time is completely appropriate. Now, I don't believe that it's even remotely close to the full FY17 that we're going to need. I don't see a way that we would need to fill that position before this point in 2017. So at least half a year. And in reality, is I don't want to fill the position until it's time to fill the position. So it may be longer than that before we fill it. But I've come kind of a full gamut, and I'm fully on board with the structure and the level that he's proposing. Deb, you were in that meeting. Did you have anything?
No, that's everything was covered, and you had flexibility as to when to bring that person on board.
Well, let me be the way right then. Because we're talking about approving a position in anticipation of the research part, which we haven't voted to spend a dollar on. So, for me, and I completely understand your situation currently, is that supervisor position something that you need now, as opposed to tiling it, you know, we're anticipating this research part being approved, funding for the research part being approved, and then we're going to need it. So we're going to get it now, or is this supervisory position something you need now? And if you've got 7 directions, reports to you, like Rick said, that's too many. It sounds to me like you need to take a look at the structure now and make those changes. It's just kind of hard for me to have the conversation of a new position needed for something that we haven't voted to, you know.
I'm going to agree with your thought process in terms of thinking of it in those terms, and I don't want to put Mike on the spot, but listening to the board and seeing all the projects and hearing all the discussion that's been going on and the direction that Mike's been pulled right now, trying to stay on top of all of those things, with you to turn high level, there's no question that having a person where some of those things could be shifted now would allow him more time to delve into that. The issue for, as we were looking at it, was more from a conceptual budgetary type of situation in terms of is how to best maximize this the need and all the other things. And if we said that maybe, and Rick used the term, maybe January or February or longer of next year, which may become part of the reality, I can see that probably being later in this fiscal, the new fiscal year, somewhere October, November, when he's got more time to look at his internal structure, look at all the different types of things. The idea that another position is needed, whether we call it administrative assistant or ranger, whatever we call it, I believe that the evidence shows that it could be an advantage for the conservation department. Now, I don't want to speak for the board. I'm just saying from an outsider looking in. And so I would leave this up to Mike and the board to chime in a little bit. But I think we were looking at it strictly written. Seemed to be looking at it more in terms of if we were going to do this, is it easier to say that a year from now or 2 years from now or a year and a half from now when the research part was up and running, yes, this ranger type person will be utilized. So when it's done, to me, it's more budgetary than need. Right now, I think there is a need, but I don't know. And I'll leave that up to Mike and Craig and Ford and you guys. That's just from an outside
point. I agree that structurally there's a need. I don't know that I agree that from a manpower perspective, until you add those 37 hours a week,
exactly,
that there's a need for the I'm with you on structure, right? I don't like seven direct reports and how that is going to constrain Mike's time, right? When I think we want him doing the other bigger things than mediating turf wars between some of our really, really good employees. That said, Paul, just to go back to what you said, you're 100% right that this board has not voted to spend $1. We don't know where the money would come from. We haven't voted on anything finalizing our involvement in the research part. But we can't suggest for a second that we're not involved in the research part. We're neck deep in the research part. We just haven't made any final proof. So, to me, not acknowledging that we're moving rapidly down that road, it doesn't commit us. I mean, we still got to have the full conversation and decide what we're doing. But I think it'd be a misnomer to pretend that we haven't talked enough about the research part to recognize it as something on our horizon. And I think as part of this budget, we got to recognize that it's something that's on our horizon. And then if something happens, and this board all of a sudden decides, no, that's the wrong way for us to go, we're not going there, then clearly we're going to make some changes. I mean, there would be things we would do. But I think we'd be making a mistake, because if it's going to happen, it's going to impact the FY17 budget. And so I believe we need to recognize that as we build the FY17 budget. And then if something changes from the direction that this board has been heading, that the Conservation Board has been heading, then we make those changes. But I'd rather make them that way if this thing falls apart than not recognize the direction it's moving and all of a sudden have to scramble to plug things in that aren't there.
Part of my concern would be, you're right, we're neck deep and we're headed that direction, but we haven't committed any dollars to it.
Correct.
And if we agree to a position where the 37 or 38 hours a week are not there yet, aren't we further committing ourselves? Are we, you know, if we approve this additional position, and I don't mean for a minute, and I hope I made that clear earlier, if you need that structure in place now, then that's, you know, that's between you and your board, put that structure in place now. But if we don't recognize it, that adding this additional person, with the need isn't there yet for the additional hours, you know, the 37 or 8 hours a week, we're further committing ourselves to this.
Which is why I'm suggesting, for me, the way to go here
is approve the concept of the position with the understanding that it is entirely based on that 37 extra hours a week that we're going to see from the research part, and we don't fill it until such time, I'm not saying that the full 37 hours are on the books, but until such time that we see that this is really coming, that there's hours that need to be accounted for, and then it's time. And so I don't see it as approving and putting in the budget. Yes, it's a number in the budget, but it's not money that's spent. It's a position that I think if we approved it, we could approve it with the agreement that this is based on the research park actually coming to fruition. I mean, a lot of work has been put in. We've clearly moved down that road, but until such time as this one goes through the process of figuring out whether we're going to commit the dollars and where the dollars are going to come from, which is going to involve public hearings, we're going to have a room full of people that are going to be interested in this. We've got to recognize all of that. But I think that doesn't preclude us from going ahead and acknowledging that that's the direction we've been heading, right? There's going to be more surprise at this point if the county does not move in that direction than if we do. And I'm not talking about happiness or unhappiness or anything else, but we made it clear that that's the direction to this point that we moved. We just haven't got to the point that it's time to make a final decision and it's time to commit dollars.
Right. And that time would be until...
It's later this spring. Right? Our timing to get to a final decision is later this spring.
I'm still thinking it's February.
Okay. So it's coming. We just got to figure out what we're doing with the budget.
And I agree with you that we would be in a better position if it was in there.
We can always pull back.
And something changed, and we change directions, and it's easier to take it out.
I think this is part of what I said earlier. We are becoming more and more sophisticated in conservation. The paramount issue to the public today is water quality. That directly relates to the ISU Research Park project. It's not only the trails, et cetera, and what the public will gain out of it, but it's the knowledge, and then it's going to become a living classroom for the entire state. So I think it's important that we look at this structure. We even start to get that structure changed before we get neck deep.
Correct.
So that person can be ready to go to work right away. And so
Paul said something that I completely agree with. And so I don't know if the current personnel that you have would allow you to go ahead and change your structure at current staffing levels or not. That's a personnel decision. But it makes sense to me that if we recognize that we need this new structure, regardless of the research part, that we would go ahead and start trying to move toward this new structure, and then it becomes a staffing issue. Now, if that's not the reality of your current staffing, then that is what it is. Then we've got to do what we've got to do. So I see it twofold. I see it structurally, it makes a lot of sense to me. It especially makes sense to me when you add the extra 37 hours a week. But then from a manpower perspective, where it really makes sense is adding basically the hours that relate to full-time positions. Grant's going to come from a lot of different positions within conservation.
I think there's no question that from the board's perspective, we would like to see Mike's talents utilized in some area other than day-to-day mundane operations. If we can offload that somewhere, that would be great. Now, I agree that we may not need the actual person hours on site until down the road somewhere, but we'd like to see us move in that direction at this point too.
Yeah, so what I suggested from a budgetary point of view, and I'm going to suggest it all the way through, is that we acknowledge that as we sit here today, while no final approval has been made on anything, we still got to have the full conversation, we acknowledge that the research park is a reality that needs to be acknowledged in terms of our planning. If it changes, it changes. But it's a reality that needs to be acknowledged. But I don't think it needs to be acknowledged for the full FY17. It's more like half of FY17. And so what I'm suggesting is that we move forward with the idea of the increase of position for half the year, as budgetarily, it'd be for half the year. And with the understanding that if the research park doesn't continue to move ahead as it has for the last 2.5 years, and there is no final approval, that this would go away, as would a lot of other things in this budget.
Right, that's true. Thank you. Mike, how does that concept strike you? Is it something doable, or you feel that...
Absolutely. I guess we've never viewed implementing the full research park operations needs until we are at that point when we need it. So that's consistent with, you know, the direction you're proposing, Rick. Now, having said that, sure. I mean, we do have that kind of operational need now. However, you know, we really view this potential opportunity as the means and the right timing to address that. Now, if let's say we end up not doing the research part, then yeah, we really got to kind of sit down and revamp and take a look at, okay, what's our current business model, and are we doing the best we can with what we have? You know, maybe we need to make some revisions in structure, but right now this is the opportunity with that added need was the mechanism that we are choosing to address that. So having said that, yeah, I think that by all means, and I would second what I think Ted said, and I think Rick, you acknowledged that we're probably going to need that person or need that labor support before we get to a place where we're opening.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting for a second that we need that we can hold off on the increased personnel when the research park opens. To me, is when the research park is approved and we're actually starting our portion of the work on it, that we need to start talking about how we're going to fill those hours. Because the reality is, if we go down the road of doing the research part, it's going to start demanding staff time. It already has demanded staff time. It's going to start demanding substantial staff time as soon as we get going.
And this is Elise's question. Basically, if the position is somewhat designated or approved with this understanding, no dollars is actually going to be expended until that person is actually on board and so forth, but it's kind of like a placeholder. It's saying that this is an identified expenditure in a position that we need, similar to what we've maybe done historically in certain departments, either when they downsized or we're planning to fill in at a later time, or the need was going to happen at a different time. Is that your understanding,
what I'm hearing is that we put the number for half of a year in the budget.
Right.
You don't have to appropriate it at all, ever.
Right.
So it can be in the budget and just not appropriate it also in order to.
So I guess since we're on that subject, just to give you all the latest on the timeline on that, you know, we've been waiting on the decision point for that final agreement, waiting on some platting from the city that has now been turned into the city, and we were thinking that will probably be on their February 9th agenda. That being the case, then I would bring that forward to the board on the 16th, if I have that date right, the week after, for consideration of that agreement with the research park.
And that kicks off, depending on where we go there, that would kick off then how we were going to fund what we were talking about, which is clearly a TIF conversation. Whether that's where we end up or not, it's clearly a TIF conversation. And what I've asked of both Mike and Leanne is to be prepared to run this potential research park project and the funding of it in the same way we ran the Davis Lake project. And so that's what you can expect, but it all gets kicked off. And so not only the platting, but also we were waiting on DOT to get some agreements to it, which I understand they have now. So it's all coming together for us to really start to weigh in on this, but it's a longer process, right? It's not as simple as us sitting down and saying, oh, yeah, we talked about the research park for 2.5 years. Yeah, let's go with it. We've got to go through the entire, you know, Dagan's Lake has been long enough ago now that I don't remember every step of the way that we had to go through. But it's a fairly elaborate process for us to get all the way through that conversation.
Correct.
So that will occur after our budget is published and probably certified. Right, we're more than a month into this conversation, right? By the time we do public hearings and anything else to get to a final decision point.
And for funding.
For funding, talking about TIF.
Yeah. So, I believe we're operating with the idea that that's a 3-month process.
Yeah. So we're going to be plugging things in way before we get to any kind of final decision.
Yeah. So I would anticipate that 3-month process starting at your pleasure, of course, but potentially in the middle of February.
Right.
So having said, you know, to follow up on that discussion then, so this staff side, the labor side of the research park, would then be cut in half. That would be.
But it really, it's going to affect a lot of line items.
That's
the payroll, the salary part of a lot of line items.
That's what we like to refer to as above the line, and we count on Lisa to just figure that out. I mean, Lisa, you're clear on what we're talking about. We're talking about half of that.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
So then I go down, unless there's something else we can talk about, I'm at vehicle fuels and maintenance.
Yep.
Couple things. One, I'd like to go ahead and take the $1,800 for tires on the tractor, and the $1,800 for repairing the Skunk River unit, and go ahead and do it in this fiscal year. It just makes sense to me that we go, if we got a sprayer unit that needs to get done, let's just get it done. Let's spend it. And so then we can pull that $3,600 back out of 17. Let's find a way to get it done this year. And then I still think we're high on the vehicle fuels and maintenance. We're halfway through the year and we've spent almost $34,000. You double that's $68,000. We just took $3,600 off of the $77,000, which takes us down to, you know, $73,000. But I still think we're heavy there. I think it's more like a $70,000 bill.
Well, and we've got on that line, we've got research park expenses.
So that's something that can come out. So my question is, knowing that the $3,600 is out, knowing that the research park is out, can we take that down to $68,000 to $70,000?
We are at 68 if you exclude that 36 and you exclude the research park.
Right. So I'm saying 68
to 68.
For this year, but I'm not sure about 17. Because we're suggesting that we're going to have half a year of the research park.
Right.
And so, which is why I'm getting to 70.
So therefore, yeah, I'm comfortable with 70.
So down from $77,000 down to $70,000.
I'm leaving the $77,000 in reestimated for current year at this point in time, just because if you're going to move some of that stuff over there.
$3,600, right?
I don't think you're going to spend $77,000. I'm not going to amend it. I'm just going
to. Okay.
And then volunteer management, tell me about the awards. It feels like we've had this conversation once, but I can't remember it. We're giving recognition to our volunteers that we have not traditionally done. It's a newer thing, I guess this year maybe newer.
It was done last year.
Yeah, we did
last year.
We did this last year. We upped it a little bit this year for more volunteers. And then also on that line item is a new $480 for a volunteer for a database. software program to manage the volunteers.
Yeah, I mean, so if you take what we did last year and add the $500 to it, that tells you how we got where we got to this year.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind those are general fund dollars. And you're providing dinners, recognition dinners and stuff.
Yeah. Lisa gets to talk to the state auditors about that stuff. They frown on using those general fund dollars if you can't justify the benefit to the citizen. Communication services, it feels like we're heavy there. I don't think we're a lot heavy.
We're not. Let's see here. Looks like we're carrying through from last year.
Less than we estimated for this year.
Right.
We have wiring for the conservation center this year that we won't next year.
You feel good about that number?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Education training we already talked about.
Rick, could I just comment back to that? You currently have a risk management program in the county now, and this committee, as I understand. Is there some of the things that they do that could be done in-house to improve the efficiency of employees, such as handling power saws and those kinds of mundane things that we might send people off to that could be done in-house? Do they have special programs that they bring people in, etc.?
We do as much as we possibly can on a countywide basis. There are a few programs that training that conservation would specifically have to do that would not be applicable to anybody else. But if there is programs, secondary roads or anything like that, I think we try to combine as much as possible.
We've been.
We can sure look at some other training opportunities.
Yeah, I'd say for the last several months now, we've been co-oping with secondary roads and facilities maintenance in their safety trainings, which are addressing many of those kind of broad brushstroke topics.
Anything else like harassment or you know, different things like that, we try to do. We're looking at some other options as far as like computer-based training. It's not bringing somebody in live, but it'd be more on a countywide basis where they could do it at their workstation. And we could keep track of everything.
Is first aid training part of that too?
We only provide first aid training to those that it's required to. Conservation has it. The sheriff's office has it. And secondary roads. But again, if we can combine when Secondary Roads has theirs, you know, we can do that.
On education and training, we've got $10,000
right.
in for Law Enforcement Academy. Now, generally, there's a session that starts in January, but I don't think that's the right time to send someone through the academy for this position. If the research part develops at that anticipated rate, I'd rather them be here and we push off that.
So if we put it off in FY18.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So let's pull the $10,000 out of that this year with the understanding that if we create the new position, that's something we're going to have to fund for FY18.
Correct.
Okay, so that takes that down to $10,630. And then my next one was grounds maintenance. You got $29,000 in there for the Marshall, your conservation portion of the Marshall Storage Drainage District. I think that's board responsibility. I'd like to see the board, and this is strictly in order to manage our ending fund balances, I'd like to see the board go ahead and pay that right at the end of this fiscal year. I'd like to see that $29,000 pulled out. I actually am asking for $30,000 out just because I like round figures. So I'm asking that we take it.
You got me confused a little bit.
It's not us. We don't know what it's going to be.
It will be assessed yet this year. It won't be due until September.
This is drainage.
Yeah, again, I'm management, and either way, I still think it's board responsibility. It's not conservation responsibility for those drainage issues. Maybe I'm opening a can of worms. I thought it was March. What's the last day? When is the last day that we can assess for it that it's due this September rather than September of 17? Yeah. So I still think it's going to be due this September. So I'm not talking about paying it a lot early. I'm just talking about trying to manage our any fund balances. Either way, I still like to take that out of conservation and take that $113,800 line item and take it down to $83,000. That's why I'm waiting on Mike to tell me.
So, and again, in this one, we've got $12,000 in there for the research park, in addition to that $29,000.
So
we could.
But it wasn't like that $12,000 is $1,000 a month. It's $12,000 that we're going to spend when we spend it, and I still believe that we're talking about sometime during FY17 for that to get spent. Even if it's June of 17.
It may happen. It may happen. That $12,000 is with the understanding that we are at build out. We have gone beyond build out.
Right, right. Not part of the build out. We're not going to be done by July 1st of 17. See, I was counting it as kind of part of the build out. Some of the stuff you'd be doing.
See, the build out costs are a separate. So.
Well, nice job. We're down to 71.
There you go.
All right.
$71,000.
Building repairs and maintenance. Let's have the. Do we consider going Story County facilities?
Here's a information that was put together from facilities for
added the conservation.
Yes. So the philosophy behind this conversation is we have a facilities department in Story County that is second to none. And all you've got to do to recognize that is walk into one of our buildings that facilities maintains and think about how old they are, how much they're used, and the kind of shape they're in. And the one exception that we have to that is the way we handle our conservation buildings. And the reason I believe that is we've made it a budgetary item rather than an ongoing upkeep and deferred maintenance item.
Right.
And what I'm suggesting is it makes a lot, even though it costs us a little more up front. I want to say, Mike, the number I've got in my head is that you're spending about $9,000 a year. We're talking about $55,000 a year. That am I even close, Joanne?
For cleaning services, in 471, we
under contractual labor in 471. Yeah, $9,000.
But there's some other cost in there that would roll out of here if we had. We know that facilities. If we said to facilities, listen, you've got to handle this. It's going to cost us $55,000 plus. It's a manpower issue. But that's a conversation that has to do with are we really going to keep CLP? What kind of manpower hours is that taking? How many true additional hours are we talking about? And in my mind, then all of a sudden we're taking our conservation buildings and we have a reasonable expectation that they be maintained like the rest of our buildings rather than, well, Mike, I think about the deferred maintenance that you inherited. You've worked through a lot of it. But the deferred maintenance that you've inherited is not the way to keep a building up. I don't believe it's in the taxpayer's interest to have buildings that are getting run down. You know, it's the old thing where you're saving a nickel and then you can cost you a dollar down the road.
So I wanted to have this full conversation and see where we were, and I think now's the time to have it.
Sure.
Well, and then that also meshes with our capital improvement plan, too, and what that means, meshing with the county's capital improvement plan. We'll be using some of the same people or contractors and maintenance people to help with those pieces.
We partially had some conversation.
Yep.
So do you currently do your, if you're going to put a new roof on a shelter, you're going to do that, or do you hire somebody to come in and do it?
Something like that, we would hire someone.
Hire somebody to come in and
do it. Yep.
Basic repairs on buildings.
Basic repairs, whether it be plumbing, whether it be, you know, light fixture repair, that kind of thing, we're doing that.
Okay.
I guess for electrical work, it's kind of a hybrid. We do what we can within the limits of regulations, and then we hire someone else to come in and do what they need to do. So it's kind of a hybrid. We do what we can.
And I think that's kind of the way facilities works.
Right.
I mean, there are certain things they can do.
They're certified for some things.
Right. But then it gets to the point where it takes too much time. I mean, we're having a conversation about putting in heaters in the county attorney's office along that north wall. And the Calvary guys put one in Jessica's office. And it took them long enough that if they're going to do seven or eight more, then, then that's something that needs to be open.
Yeah. So, and frankly, I've been interested in this because of that. It feels like within the county there are people that are specialized in this, and we are not.
Well, I think it comes back to the conversation, where's your time best spent?
Right, exactly.
Is your naturalist, is this time best spent fixing a broken toilet?
Right.
Or is that something that facilities can do?
Exactly. Yeah. And hence the genesis of this discussion. So, what's that? Fixing the toilet?
Well, and I think it lines up. I think the dovetail of our conversation with CLP and what is happening. So CLP, we used to have a lot more facilities work in CLP than we have now. But we maintain staffing levels where they were when we had all that work, right? I think we filled some of that time with some special projects, and we've done a few things. But if CLP rolls all the way, we relinquish ownership of that this spring, like I expect it's going to happen. Back to the old conversation, it's not anything we've agreed to or anything like that, but it's a conversation that's happened. If we're all the way out of the CLP business, right, then to me it frees up some existing staff time that can be put into something. Because the big concern is not the 55. The big 55,000 of extra cost. The big concern is, what are you doing staffing-wise? Do you have to go increase your manpower? And I look at it and I say, I'm not convinced that we have to increase the manpower if CLP is all the way gone. Maybe we'll get into it and find out we do. I still think we're coming out ahead because two reasons. One, it maintains our buildings at a level that we aren't just deferring maintenance to the Lord, that when you walk in, you recognize it's a Story County building and it looks like a Story County building. And two, we're freeing up our conservation staff to do what our conservation staff is supposed to be.
I like
that. I agree 100% with that. In the back of my mind, one of my cautions is that, right now, if we know something needs to happen, then if we have the means to do it financially, then we're going to get it done. If we don't have the means, then we look for those means and we bring it forward in a budget, etc. I wouldn't want to go down this road and then have add another hurdle in getting work done that needs to get done.
Yeah, and I think that's a really reasonable concern. What I will say about that is you look at the history of this board, and with the exception of a shower in the prison, I don't think we've had any deferred maintenance issues. I mean, the three of us, first time we sat down together, we inherited a lot of deferred maintenance issues. The leak above Lisa Markley's head in the auditor's office was one of them. But we don't, again, with the exception of that shower, we don't carry any deferred maintenance. And so I would think that that should offer you some comfort. The other thing is, when it comes down to it, if you're talking about dollars, this is the board that you want locked in as much as possible, right? Your dollars are going to be a little more focused, a little more limited. It's going to be harder to handle. If we end up with you had a furnace issue, maybe you still have a furnace issue, but you had a furnace issue that drug on for 3 years, right?
Right, right.
I would hope that the Board of Supervisors would not allow something like that to happen, and it just looks to me like, from a budgetary point of view, we created a system that forced that to happen, because we were asking you to do all the maintenance and do it based on the cost rather than what's right. I think this board tries to do what's right for a building, and I'm just suggesting that we pull conservation into that circle.
Well, it seems like you're trying the philosophy of being centralized when you need general service and being specialized and decentralized. It's gone back and forth. You're going back to the decentralization-centralization balance rather than all decentralized.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But, Nancy, part of that is the expertise question, right?
Yep.
Who do you want working on?
Right.
And you know, conservation's been the interesting one to me, because here we've gotten more and more centralized, but conservation's kind of out on that island on its own. And what I'm suggesting is, fortunately, we have such a good working relationship between Conservation Board and the Board of Supervisors, but I'm suggesting there are areas where it makes a whole lot of sense for you to be part of the circle rather than an island on your own.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I would envision some sort of an audit process with your board and Cal. And, you know, we would be prepared, or have to be prepared, to spend a little money up front, because all you're going to do is work inside Cal pickup, and you know how he likes to keep stuff. I mean, he's got a great eye for that kind of stuff. So, and that's where, you know, your board would have to keep in pretty good contact with him. You know, this is what we're looking at, or, you know, we've identified this, and then, you know, he's the guy that does the scheduling for his minutes.
Well, if we ask Cal to do this with his department, you need to just know he doesn't do it halfway. That's a great thing,
right?
But it's also going to be a pain in the butt too. I mean, you just need
yep.
to recognize that.
Yep.
He's got expectations for the way things are going to be handled,
right,
and the way his areas are going to be kept, that will probably be a little different than what you guys have done in the past.
And he's really, really strong on safety.
Yep.
So he'll identify any questionable areas that you guys thought nothing about, and even with that, say, you know, this is a trip hazard, or, you know, anything like that. So.
And I assume there are protocols in place for mutual satisfaction. So if one party or the other isn't happy with how it's working, there's a way to work through that.
Board of Supervisors.
And there's also criteria for prioritizing projects so that, you know, we've got toilets that are bad, but someone else has got a leak above their head. How does he know which one he's going to do first?
Yeah, I mean, our issue with Cal, Nancy, is that he tries to do it all right now, and then he's stressed out about it.
Yeah, and that's a little bit of what I'm worried about, is we lose control of quality and timing, but we gain flexibility in other things.
Yeah, I would say I would have zero concern about your quality question. The timing question, I think, is 100% fair, because the reality is you have a problem that comes in. It's not as simple as, okay, who's got time to go fix the toilet, right? It is you're notifying him, he's scheduling somebody to get out there. I think timing is the quality side, it's going to go up.
Good.
So, this one feels to me like it's, if we go down this road, you're talking about a lot of different places that there might be some adjustments that you need to make in your budget. I don't know that we can sit here today and I'm suggesting, Mike, that you, Jolene, go and look and say, okay, if we go down this road, we know the contract labor line goes away, but I think there's some other areas that also go away because it's absorbed in that.
If we utilize maintenance for the custodial support,
right,
then that contract would go away.
Right.
And I would envision that happening.
I don't want to do it. If we're going to do it, let's do it. If we're not going to do it, then let's just keep status quo and let's go ahead. It's a known, right? We know what we're spending. We know what we're getting. If we're going down the road and trying, trying to do this and bring you guys in as part of the whole, let's go ahead down that road.
Okay. Well, so we'll then we'll go back and look at any adjustments to 17, FY17 budget. I will say that I'd be reticent to think we could equal the 55,000.
I think there is recognition on this board that the 55 is greater than the offset in your budget.
Right.
I think if we're going to go down this road, it is this board recognizing that we're spending a little more up front in order to get a better product and hopefully save dollars in the long haul in terms of the way things are maintained and what we have to do. But, Mike, I'm not asking you to go away and find $55,000.
Okay.
I'm asking you to find what you can, what we can truly get rid of if we're doing this. Hopefully there's a nice offset. But I think if we do this, there's recognition that we're spending a little more money to get it done.
On those hidden offset costs of effectiveness and efficiency of staff.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, you
can't.
Right.
Right.
But that's not anything that's going to show up in a line.
Right. Right.
Along with the better care of the building.
Right.
And the life expectancy of the staff.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. Good.
Take me through contract labor. Let's start, Blaine.
I was going to ask if we, what's the follow-up? Visiting after they've had a chance to take a look at this, visiting with Cal, having Mike and William and staff, the ranges and there, how do you see us moving forward within the next?
Well, I don't know how long it's going to take. I'm hoping that it's something that you guys get together almost immediately upon leaving here. You figure out what it is. You call Lisa and let her know what kind of numbers we plug in. And then Lisa reports to us on Friday where this comes down. We do the same thing, Alyssa, with Cal, and just say, this is the direction it's moving. Let's really dig in. And then Friday when we have the Board of Supervisors conversation and we start to move toward what is our published budget look like, we've got some idea. And then if we're not satisfied or there's further questions, then we look at doing a callback with conservation. So we can probably put both of them at the table at the same time and just talk this thing through.
Okay. Right. And Dad, you would not show up with that. I bet that was a schedule back then in the morning.
Right.
Did
that
give you enough time for you to go
in? Yeah, I mean, if it doesn't, it doesn't. But I don't think this is overly complex. I think it's just a matter of sitting
down. Yeah, that's fine.
Good.
So then, okay, so that line then, or that category, building repairs and maintenance will be adjusted.
Right. That takes us to contract labor, which clearly the $9,000 for cleaning comes out. But then I wanted you to take you through, okay, so I understand the sensitive area inventory update, but take us through it again, just since it's a $75,000 bill. And
so, a couple things. And we had a preliminary discussion with Leanne when it related to the CIP. For this item, we can break that 75 down across fiscal years. So we can do it. If we wanted to move some forward, we could move a small portion of that forward to 16, and some in 17. And the more I think about it, probably a little bit in 18. This isn't a one shot and it's done.
Right.
This, in order to do this right, we're going to have some upfront money that kind of sets some framework and does some kind of desk work with looking at GIS, looking at natural resource layers, and then taking that into the field and doing some preliminary field work. And then there's probably doing some follow-up field work because things that might not be inventoried in one period, in order to inventory everything, you're going to have to spread that out a little bit. maybe definitely across seasons and perhaps across years. So that's, therefore, I'm thinking of that 75, that can be spread out over 3 years.
Yeah, and so what I was going to ask is, can we go, can we pull 15 of that into this year, plug 50 in for FY17, and recognize that we've probably got another 10,000 that we're going to have to put in 18 in order to finish things off?
Yeah, I mean, I would say maybe 15 this year.
Yep.
And then I would say maybe 40.
Okay.
And then the balance in 18.
All right. So 20,000 in 18. But as it relates to us today, it means we can reduce the contractual labor by 35,000 for that one line item and the 9,000 for the cleaning. Right?
And the other thing that we can reduce on that is there's $5,000 for water quality monitoring at the research park. I don't want to, I guess I would advise against not removing all of that, just because I think we need some before in order to really utilize this as a teaching tool. Need some.
If we go down the road and do research, I mean, the water quality issue, it's nice that we would have the park. It's nice for the trail tie-in. It's nice to enhance our relationship with Iowa State and Ames and all the ancillary things that go along with it. But don't kid yourself for a second. The big sales point on this, if we end up going through, is the idea of being ahead of the game on water quality issue and water quality research. And if we're going to sell this thing, all said and done, I mean, you've heard my counterpart here and his queasiness on where this thing is headed. All said and done, if we're going to get this thing where I'd like to see it done, it's a water quality issue. And then everything else is a benefit. So I'd like to see some of that in how much. How much of the $5,000 do we keep?
I would say we probably need to keep 2,000.
Okay. Lisa, what do we do to that line item?
You decimated it.
Good.
$76,760 is the new amount.
$76,760. All right. And then my last one, amazingly enough, is equipment and machinery. I start with the van.
Well, I was just going to say, while you're talking with Cal, ask him about the 3-point rotor tiller. I think he told me one time he had one.
Oh, is that right?
Sitting around
someplace. Oh, okay.
So just check with him. It may not be the way you want, but if we've got one and we're not sure we do or not, that it's not being used, and if it's in good shape, you can use it for a couple of seasons.
Sure, sure.
That's all I have.
Yep.
The van. Did we agree we aren't doing the van?
That was after we put this forward. But so, if I understand right, it's the 15 passenger that's in the fleet pool that the idea is of conservation using that 15?
Yes.
With the caveat of when it's needed for elections.
Lucy Martin has first priority.
Yes.
As it relates to elections. Outside of that, I don't think anybody else has priority above conservation outside of when Lucy needs it.
I guess what I would suggest, and I need to chat with our staff more, Jerry, who's been out for several weeks now right now, but I need to chat with him. What I would maybe suggest is we have a 15 passenger as well. What I would suggest is maybe looking at seeing if it makes sense to combine uses on a 15 passenger and convert one 15 into a 7.
Well, this one, I just put a trailer hitch on it so we can pull our trailer collection equipment.
Yep.
The size, I can use it without the trailer hitch for smaller elections, just the van.
Yep.
So,
yep.
So 7 doesn't
work for my
purposes. No, I understand that. What I'm saying is if there's capacity between the two departments to share one 15-passenger, then convert the other 15 into a 7-passenger.
You would convert conservations into a 7.
You would still have a 15-passenger when needed.
Yeah, but the other conservation ones you're talking about, the older ones.
So instead of having two 15-passengers, right. If it makes sense for the need for both departments to eliminate one 15, keep one 15, and turn the right. second 15 into a 7-passenger.
Right, but to me, so that's a van that already exists.
Right.
To me, that's a conservation issue, right? So it comes down to, do you have enough access to the 15-passenger van that we're telling you about that it can fill your need as the 15? Then it makes perfect sense to me that you would convert yours to a 7-passenger.
Or 6 1/2 dozen of another.
We need a 7-passenger van more than a second 15.
I think it just makes more sense to have, from an efficiency standpoint,
right.
The smaller vehicle if that meets your needs. And so that's all I'm suggesting is this budget item is replacing one 7-passenger. And so I think it would make more sense if we can go that, have instead of having two 15s between the two, have one 15 that's shared and then another 7.
So just so I'm clear, would you trade in your 15?
What's that?
You would trade in two vehicles to get the one 7-passenger van?
No, we'd trade in one of the two 15s for a 7.
Okay, but you were trading in a 7 here on a 7.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
So you would keep this old 2007, or you would get an additional 7-passenger.
We'd still trade the 7 in for another 7.
But you'd trade a 15 in for another 7.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm confused now.
Maybe I'm confusing that.
We turn in the current 15 and the current 7 to get a 7, and we would share the 15. Right?
So you trade 2 in for 1.
Two vehicles in for a new 7.
Essentially, ours is partially paid for by the Story County Community Foundation and has a nice paint wrap and everything. I don't know that we want to trade that one in, but maybe we trade the existing or the 15 that the auditor's using.
Yeah, we're going to keep the one that the auditor uses just because we put enough money into it getting it ready for the auditor. With the trailer hitch and her, I mean, it's basically a mobile command unit for most of your
bigger elections means to haul the trailer to spawn
and
use it as
a if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Yep.
You know, I mean, we haul a trailer with ours too. So
it's just a trailer hitch, it's not a big deal.
Right.
Which one of the two 15s is in the best shape to go further?
Ours.
Right. Ours is fairly new.
It's
a
couple
years
old.
It's
a
mileage.
CLP.
It was fairly.
When did
they create it?
It was
a couple years old.
2010.
We can figure that out.
Yeah. End of the day, what you're telling me is we need to leave the 28 for the 7-passenger van in here.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
If we can use, I mean, if we can combine with the 15, then we could potentially eliminate that.
Right, and what I'm telling you is conservation may use that 15-passenger van anytime you need it outside of when the auditor needs it to run elections. So if you can make that work and consolidate down, great. If not, then we need to have the conversation of what you need to do.
Right. Right. Right.
And as well, you said there are elections.
Yeah, I mean, they still maintain the van, and we are just making clear with facilities that for elections, we have that van available. Is there anything on here, Mike, that we can pull that you need? Is there anything on here? So Paul mentioned the three-point tiller. We'll check into with facilities. Do we really need that? Is there anything on here that you'd like but you don't need? And is there anything on here that we can go ahead and get in this fiscal year and take out of FY17?
Well, there are some things we could move forward. And there are things that we can just remove.
Okay.
So potentially for moving forward, I mean, is any number of those numbered items 1 through 10 could be moved forward.
Okay.
We're about to take the copier.
Sure, I take the copier.
I was going to say that'd be a good target.
Yeah.
All right, so
ours is starting to wear out.
It's on borrowed time.
So let's pull the copier forward.
Okay.
And then the research park items. For example, I don't think we're going to need a snowblower attachment in FY17.
No, so the research park ones, the UTV at $15,000, the snowblower at $5,000, the broom brush attachment at $3,000, the mower attachment at $3,500, all of those could be removed.
So FY18, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so the only thing we're getting ISU, the only thing we're putting in the budget ISU Research Park would be the pickup at some point in FY17.
Correct.
So 2 through 9.
2 through 9 for FY18 and number 10 into current year.
And we're still waiting on direction on the 7-passenger van you guys are thinking about.
Right.
What that looks like. You're going to let Lisa know on that one. Pulling the copier forward and getting rid of everything related to the research park except the pickup.
And potentially eliminating the three-point tiller.
Right.
What's the snow going
on? The clear trails at the research park. It would go on that UTV.
That UTV would just live, once the research park is completed, it would just live at the research park and it would have the ability to sweep the trails and the ability to put it in the snow.
It does all the trail maintenance. So, I mean, that was our idea, that we just get one piece of equipment that can do all of that. So, snow, mow, plow, etc.
I just want to point out that we've got almost $1.4 million in capital improvement projects. You extend down and you take a look at this year's budget over last year's budget, and that tells you where the increases are, is in those capital improvement. If we don't want to, well, I think we're too far down the road. I mean, those are projects. And the other part that I'll point to is we've got $550,000 of that coming in the form of grants. And,
correct.
I want to make a comment on the Prairie Trail Extension construction. You've got $325,000 in there, and that includes the $155,000 that we've committed out of.
That $325,000 can go down to, per our CIP discussion, can go down to $224,000.
And does that include the $155,000 that we have in urban renewal?
Yes.
So I'm saying that I've got that budgeted somewhere else. I've got $155,000 budgeted somewhere
else. Right, so you can take that $155,000 out of the $325,000.
And that goes to $170,000 according to my math, but you say $155,000.
Well, okay, that $325,000 was based on a conceptual budget as well, preliminary budget. Now we have a better budget.
Okay, so your current budget for the project is
$440,000.
Okay.
So you take out the $60,000 that we currently have budgeted in 16, and then you take out the $155,000. That should put you at $224,000.
Okay. $224,000 or $725,000. $225,000. So you submit those claims and start the meeting or talk to me and just simplify it.
Okay. So I guess I'd be happy to explain any number of these, any of them. Are there specific questions that you have first? That
I mean, the ones that I didn't know anything about were the deck repairs and the Touch of Life trail extensions, but they're both smaller ticket items, and on the surface that makes sense. I don't know if you guys want to talk about any of those.
So the deck replacement is, the deck behind the conservation center there is very aged and it's warping, and we've had quite a bit of repair work this year that gets used heavily by the public, by children, classes that are out there. And so we've got cracking and warping and trip hazards and it needs attention. And so that's what that is. The trail extension is just to cover materials for the concrete across the trail or across the dam.
Yep.
Excuse me. That's the only gravel surface now that we have in the Touch of Life trail all the way around the lake.
Okay. Yeah. And so for me, with where we're headed with this thing, I don't believe that Cal needs to be involved at all in any of the trail stuff. But when we're talking about doing something like putting a deck on, I mean, Cal has a role. Now, I'm not suggesting that his guys are doing the work or anything like that, but he has a role in helping the management of that project, helping with the management of that project.
So your summary at the beginning was right, that there's 550 of these expenses are coming in as revenue. We get the $100,000 that's there at the top, that capital projects for land acquisition. That's the in and out I referenced at the beginning of the meeting. The $550,000 for shoreline erosion, $450,000 of that was money I referenced when we discussed revenue from DNR.
We made a commitment that the water quality along at Hickory Grove is really, really important to us. We put money in some other areas to try to help address that. I think it's completely reasonable that we would spend $100,000 of the $500,000 project to get that done. And as far as the bath house, which I think is the $500,000 that's strictly coming from the county, it's just right. I mean, that is the gem of our county park system. We haven't done much to it ever.
Right.
I guess we could sure go through and talk about that again, whether that $500,000 is money well spent. I think it is. But it impacts the bottom line of this budget. We need to recognize that.
Right.
When you say it's a tornado shelter, are we talking about the one deal that we went out and visited?
It'd be the building you went through this summer.
So, conceptually, would it be torn down and then rebuilt?
Correct.
Okay. Up to the quality where it could also serve as a storm shelter.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
That's because I kept kind of putting my arm around $500,000 for remodeling, and then I kept trying to think, well, I'm a city boy, but when I walk out there and I see, that day I just could not conceptually understand why this guy was so upset with the condition of that area. But it just took a little scouring the walls,
right,
and so forth and this and that, Being an outdoor person, I would think that you would expect that. I didn't see that in every eye. But that makes a little sense.
Yeah.
Currently right now, we don't have any other storm shelter area, so in the eastern part, for that matter, because even if the trailer parks and all that, they have to come into the neighborhood. We did not basically.
This is under the trailer, doesn't that work?
So, let's go ahead.
Well, I'll just kind of think.
It updates.
Why it would take that much is what the question and part of my question the thought process is, you know, down in Huxley have that, when they have that room there by the, I'm just curious as to why it would cost quite that much.
So I've been in, we have 100,000 in FY16 to do design work. And I'm in the process of getting that contract done with a firm that designed the same facility in Woodbury County. So my idea is if we can just use that design, then we can save some money, that save some design money. That Woodbury facility, I forget which park it's at, but cost in the neighborhood of $700,000. And so we're thinking that, you know, we can shave that a little bit, get that down a little bit, particularly if we can use their design. And also another potential cost savings is that was FEMA funded, and with that had some additional costs that wouldn't be necessary in the functionality of a safe room. And so then we could eliminate a little bit of those costs. Now, we did try. I put a grant application in to FEMA for this project, and it was denied. FEMA right now doesn't have any more money available for these kinds of structures, and they don't anticipate having any more available. So combination of we don't have to, say, meet those extra things that FEMA would require, and that's not an option for us anyway that we foresee. So we could shave that down a little bit and hopefully use that same design.
Okay, but not to discount the need, as Rick has indicated, but if we were just, you know, we've never had a storm shelter there, and we just built an upgraded structure, why would that not be something that we would want to do?
The structure doesn't meet the requirements. Normal construction doesn't meet the requirements to be a shelter.
Yeah.
Go up to the New Gilbert High School and look at their wrestling room, which they constructed to be the shelter at the school. Look at the construction of it. It's much more than what a shower facility, bath facility would be. Yeah, to withstand the forces.
So you're and that's talking about like the fire building that we went to and they have a meeting that you shower in.
Correct. Yep. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. So, yeah, do we have to make a storm shelter? That's our decision.
Yeah.
We view this as that is a very aged facility. And in looking at the long term, where we want to go with the park, we want to expand the campground. You know, we're working toward that with the sewer. Next on the list, frankly, is the old bathhouse or beach house. That's going to be the next thing that we'll discuss. And we're looking at maybe some cabins on the site. We're looking at running water to some of the shelters so we can have some flush facilities at those. So all of those are improvements. Frankly, right now, the campground is not big enough. In order to get a site there, people are there on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and we're full. We want to expand the capability there.
Yeah. Increase that revenue.
Yeah. I think if you're replacing the shower, it makes complete sense to replace it with a building that can serve as a storage.
Right.
Right. Somewhere down the line, we're going to be forced to anyway.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's never going to be cheaper than doing it as part of this. So could we say? Could we go from 500 to 300 by not making the storm shelter? Yeah, probably.
Right. Then 5 years from now,
it's 500 to put in a storm shelter.
That's right. Right.
I had a couple more things. In the environmental health work session, we were talking about radon, and when Margaret did went around the county and did the radon checks in the county building, in the two houses, they had higher levels, and we were going to revisit that.
Yeah.
They did have higher levels, and we went back, hired a testing firm to come in and test.
Okay.
And then they were okay.
Okay.
We haven't revisited since then, and I can't remember when that was.
I see. Luke was here, so
I would say within the year.
Yeah.
Maybe it might have been the beginning of last summer.
Maybe at some point in FY18, let's go test them again. And if we get higher, then we may need to talk about mitigation.
Yeah. I think if we just keep on top of them and test them at whatever recommended intervals, since it did test high at one point. And, you know, I don't know what Margaret used. I think she used the same kit that are available. So it's a pretty it's a $5 radon kit is what, what she used.
Right.
So.
And so then we had someone come in and do the continual, put the machine in there and do the continual testing and then did the average.
Okay.
That's what we did.
That's what we did.
Okay. Cool.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Good job.
All
right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.